Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Matt Leon. Just a couple of things before the podcast starts. Number one, with about 5 minutes or so to go in the interview, you'll notice a change in the sound of the audio from Demetrius. We tried to address it on the fly, couldn't figure out what the problem was. We just wanted to let you know it wasn't your device or anything. Number two, and more importantly, I just wanted to say, when I set up this interview, I didn't know about the serious health challenges Demetrius has been battling the last few months and continues to battle. You'll hear about them in the first few minutes of our talk. Now, we did have an earlier interview date that we had to cancel because he was ill, but I didn't have any idea of the scope of things. And I just want to say it would have been really easy for him to just decline this interview. So I am incredibly grateful that he found time for me. And I also want to say if I ever find myself facing half the challenges he has over the last few months, I can only hope to do so with the grace, positivity, and good humor he shows during this conversation. So with that being said, let's get to the podcast.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
I use myself as an example to help other people. I think I've found my purpose. I'm not here just for myself. I'm here to serve the community. I'm here to serve the university. And I'm here to be a father and make sure that I pass on the strength of my lessons that I've had in my life so I can pass them on to other people.
And our guest this week is Demetrius Poles. He is the head women's basketball coach at Division III Rowan University down in Glassboro. He was a phenomenal player in his own right, one of the greatest to ever come out of South Jersey. His number retired at his alma mater, Delcy High School. And Demetrius Poles, thanks so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Matt. I really appreciate you having me.
First of all, it is great to see you, and it's even better to see you. You were telling me off the air. I mean, obviously, the last year has been difficult for everyone, but your journey since December has been something else. It just makes me really happy to see you. Kind of talk about medically what you had to deal with here the last few months.
Well, yeah, it's been a rough ride. I got diagnosed with cancer. In December, multiple myeloma, was cancer in the bones. I got cancer in my spine. I had to have surgery. I had back fusion surgery, which kind of left me messed up a little bit. I'm still not walking, and hopefully I get that fixed. And then at the end of February, I got diagnosed with COVID, and I was on a ventilator 4 days and stayed in the hospital for almost a month. I almost passed away. I had to really, really, really fight for my life to get back. But it was a rough ride, and now I'm on a recovery. I also had kidney failure in December, so I'm going to dialysis for three times a week as well. So I'm hoping to fight to get my kidneys back. And by the end of the summer, I'm hoping to get stem cell treatment so I can put the cancer in remission and get my kidneys back.
Just talking to you, you're still incredibly positive and all. Just, you know, how are you taking life these days? Is it just day by day and get better little by little?
Well, at first I had that thought process, but then, you know, I have two boys. I have custody of my two boys, and they just give me life every day. I didn't want to fail them. I think I was just trying to find a way because I knew I wasn't done parenting. And, you know, our purpose on earth is to be here to guide the children. And I think that's my purpose here, is to be a leader in the community, but first be a father. And all my life I wanted to be a good dad. And I just didn't want to leave my kids. So I think my kids and the girls on my team and the athletic department, it gave me a lot of strength. So at first I thought it was a day-by-day thing and, you know, help me fight that way. But I think that my purpose is a little bit bigger here. And that helps me fight every day.
Not through all that, but as you've been recovering, you were telling me, still recruiting, still putting a team together, huh?
Gotta keep on going. The competitive spirit does not leave, even though you're going through rough patches, but I still have that competitive spirit to compete. I can't wait to get back in on the court and coach. And the girls on my team have really kept me going. They kept my spirits up, and they gave me something to fight for, and they just really kept me going. So I knew I had to do the best I could for them to get the best players I can to come in and row in and try to do my recruiting from my bedside. And from now I'm in my recliner at home, and that's all I can do is recruit now. But eventually I have to stop recruiting because we don't have much more space on the team.
That's an incredible last 5 or 6 months. How did you deal with all of it on top of each other? Like, you kind of mentioned all these things on top. Any one of those would be enough to break the spirit of a lot of people.
Yes. I mean, I have to admit, my spirit was broken. I was kind of, why me? And, you know, why now? Why everything all of a sudden? But I had to, like I said, the support did a whole lot for me. Everybody in the athletic department really supported me. They kind of kept me going. The other coaches, we feed off of each other's adrenaline and competitiveness, and we love to see each other do well. And just the contact that I had with a lot of people from around the world, I have friends in Europe that worried about me. That all kept me going. And like I said, along with my children. So I had to figure out a way to compartmentalize different things in my life and see what's important. And I want to give back to the people who supported me. And that's pretty much my team, my athletic department, and everything. So I always knew that, you know, I'm a competitor, so I knew I was going to come back. And that wanting to get better, wanting to get healthier, wanting to be clearer in the mind, wanting to get my lungs back healthy, wanting to get my, you know, my walking back and my strength. That's all a competitive spirit. But I did have to have the support from the people that I mentioned. So if I didn't have the support, it would have been a lot harder.
I mentioned when I introduced you, I mean, you're a South Jersey basketball legend. Take me back to the early days. What is your first basketball memory? Do you have one that, when you think about kind of your origin story, your first big memory with hoops?
Yeah, my first memory was Joe Crispin's father coaching my uncle in Glasgow High School in the 80s. And my uncle, when they won a state championship, I don't remember the details who they beat, but Glasgow High School was very, very good in the 80s. And I went to every game with my family, and my Uncle Wilbur played. And I just remember to win the state championship. I don't remember exactly what year, 85 or 86, something like that. They won the state championship. And I just remember the joy that they all had and the joy that my uncle had and my family had. And I was just a little boy. And I remember saying to myself, I want to be like that. This seems like a lot of fun. And then a few years later, I was doing it.
When you're growing up, when do you start to realize that you're better than most kids playing basketball? I mean, do you start getting picked first, you know, in gym class or, you know, when it comes to go out for the team? Do you remember when it started to click with you?
Yeah, in middle school, you're the tallest, so they assume you're the best one already because you're the tallest. And then my ball skills was not so bad, so I could dribble like a guard a little bit. But my first memories were me getting picked because I was the tallest, and people just assuming that I could play because I was taller than them. But all in all, I was a little bit better because I grew up with my family members playing, you know, every day. But my earliest memories were being picked because I was the tallest.
So I mentioned you go to Delsey and you get a lot of attention at Delsey and you do a lot of incredible things. When you think of your high school days, what are the memories? You won a state title there. What are the memories from your time at Delsey?
Well, the memories are the relationships that I developed, because I was a little bit unique situation where I was growing up, I was going to Glassboro. And then my mother got a house built in Elk Township. And a lot of people don't know Elk Township is in the middle of Clayton and Glassboro. And if you live in Elk Township, you have to go to Delsey. And so it's kind of a weird situation. So when I came to Elk Township, in seventh grade, I had to develop new relationships. I didn't know anybody here. I actually knew one person. He's my best friend, Earl Simmons. He was our shooting guard on our team, our second leading scorer at Delsey when we won a state championship. So I had to make new relationships and everything, get to know everybody over again and, you know, kind of start a new life here. But it was great. The relationships I developed were great because it led up to winning a state championship. Every person on my team that I had to meet was new friendships and learning how to play with everybody and, you know, not really knowing, going to school and not talking to many people except the people you know on the team because you didn't know anybody. It all added up to me fitting right in, obviously, and kind of taking over these guys, and they kind of follow my lead, and they also push me as well because I played with some good athletes in high school, played with a lot of Division I football players. So, they were competitive, and they pushed me to be as best I could be as well.
How much you talk about, you know, switching schools in seventh grade, and that's a difficult age to do that, to have to start over. I mean, that's an awkward time for everybody, regardless of the circumstances. How much did basketball help make it easier for you to develop those new relationships, to feel comfortable, to kind of find your place in a new place?
Yes. Well, at that time, you're exactly right. It was very difficult because, I have a younger brother. It was easier for him. But at that time, Delsey has split sessions. So I was in seventh grade, and some of my school day was with the high school kids. So they were much older than I was, but I got a chance to play basketball in, like, the gym with them. And they thought I was in high school. They thought I was in ninth grade. And they were all excited, and, oh, we got a new ninth grader. And I kept telling them, I'm in seventh grade. I just transferred from Glassboro. I just got here. I'm not in ninth grade. I won't be in your team. So, but that's how it went when I went to Delsey. I got a chance to play against the older kids, the high school kids when I was younger, and they thought I was in high school already. And they were like, they could wait for it. They forget about the football season. They just skipped over that. They could wait for me to play high school basketball with. So that's how that went at the beginning. It was kind of awkward, but they had to realize that they'll never play with me unless, you know, you were within my age group. But that's how I got to meet a lot of the athletes at Nelson when I first came over.
So you're playing basketball, and I'm not exaggerating. You and I, we're about the same age. I went to Clayton. You were at Delsey. And this is before the internet. This was the Gloucester County Times was the way you kept track of everything. And yes. I remember being in the cafeteria, people talking about, hey, did you hear what Demetrius Poles did last night against so-and-so? And like, there was almost a mythology around how good you were at Delsey. Did you feel that? And how did you handle that attention? Was there any pressure? Was it fun? Was it overwhelming at times? What was that like?
I think I didn't get that type of fanfare. I got a little bit, you know, maybe from the reporters or maybe some fans at Delsey. I got it more from being recruited by everybody, by the coaches, and getting phone calls all type of the nights. And, you know, my mother's trying to sleep and go to work, and there's people calling me at 12 o'clock at night and from the West Coast and everything. But I didn't know it was really like that. I played for fun. I played to win. I love to compete. I knew that it was like, for instance, Clayton. I didn't know they liked me. I thought everybody didn't like each other. Or I was out to kill Clayton. Clayton was out to kill me. You know, that type of thing. I was super competitive, and I wasn't really aware of the fanfare that I had around here until I graduated, until we won a state championship, and everybody back in South Jersey was happy for us. I didn't know anybody was happy for us except people at Delsey.
And you talk about getting calls all times of the night and coaches and stuff like that. What are some of the memories of, like, coaches showing up, and were there moments when you're like, I can't believe I'm talking to this coach, or this coach knows who I am? I mean, was there any of that? Because it sounds like they were coming from any and everywhere.
Yeah, I got recruited by everybody. It was overwhelming. It was a lot of fun. I've had Jim Boeheim at my house, which was really incredible. One of my first letters was from St. Joe's, where I actually ended up going. Actually, my first two letters, I remember sitting in the grass at Bethlehem Park in a summer league. I was in eighth grade, and I got three letters. I got one for football and two for basketball. One from South Carolina. This is after my freshman year. Yeah, after my freshman year. South Carolina, St. Joe's, and Penn State. St. Joe's and Penn State were for basketball. And then after that, you know, especially my senior year, I pretty much got recruited by everybody. I got letters, phone calls. I got phone calls all the time. My mother made me get my own phone number in my bedroom because she got tired of all the phone calls. But my mom worked 12 hours a day at Sony Music. So, and she worked 7 to 7. But she would change her 7 to 7, sometimes 7 in the morning to 7 at night. And then she would go sometimes 7 at night to 7 in the morning. So she needed her sleep. So I had to get another phone in my bedroom because I got too many phone calls. I was getting phone calls every half an hour, it seemed like. So because phone calls from the West Coast came in pretty late for us, and it would mess up my mother's sleep.
So you mentioned watching as a kid, you know, Glassboro win the state title and that joy. In 91, when you lead Delsey to us, I mean, what was that experience, that journey like? And, you know, was it all that you had seen it be and hoped it would be?
Oh, it was a lot more. And it was is a lot of work when you win something like that. As you go through a lot, but it's fun. It's not hard. Well, it was hard, but it wasn't arduous or wasn't something that you didn't want to do. It was something that you talk about, but you can't touch it and you can't feel it. But at the end, you know that if you're a senior and you're like, and you won your last game, that's a beautiful thing. You can't beat that. But that state championship, it was filled with so much joy, but it was also a lot of relief because you went through so much. You go through so much. You know, you get challenged. You go through your ups and downs, and you sometimes you believe, sometimes you don't believe as much as you should. Sometimes you lose a little bit of confidence, but you always fight back because you know there's a goal at the end, and that there's, and you just want to be the best. So when we actually won, it was relief, it was joy, a lot of happiness, a lot of tears, and it was a great way to end my high school career for all of us too, because we were a team, bunch of seniors on the team.
So we talk about the recruiting and all the schools. You end up going to St. Joe's. What sold you on St. Joe's? And that was John Griffin was the coach when you went there, correct?
John Griffin was the head coach, but Phil Martelli did the recruiting, and he was the one who really sold me to come to St. Joe's. I always wanted to go to Syracuse. That was my top choice. I love Billy Owens. I love Derek Coleman. I love the Orange. That was my favorite school. It was either North Carolina or Syracuse, and Jim Boeheim ended up coming to my house, and I really wanted to go, but it was a matter of, it came down to actually Syracuse got on probation my senior year of high school. They took away scholarships. So I think it was several of us, me, James Forrest, Luke Jackson. We were all their top recruits that year. And we didn't know what to do because it wasn't anything specific. But I think Luke Jackson, if you look it up, he was the only one in my year to go to Syracuse. If you look it up, I think he was the only recruit that they took. Because at first they just said it was no recruit, nobody's allowed to go. So St. Joe's is my second option, but they were 1A. It was Syracuse is 1, St. Joe's is 1A. And Phil Martelli was the biggest part of me going to St. Joe's.
You were, I think you made the all-rookie team in the conference as a freshman. Was the transition to college relatively easy, or was it tough at first? How would you kind of categorize it?
Well, it's tough. Anybody going to, you know, college is tough. And I tell my players now, that are in high school, you know, is a hard adjustment. You're on your own. You're responsible for everything. Your grades are on your own. You're way more independent. You don't have a lot to lean on outside the court. But on the court, I think that, I made the first team all freshman my freshman year. Had a pretty decent year. But I think that I was a player who was a little bit more dynamic, and I got kind of pigeonholed. I like to do more than one thing on the court. And if you look at me play, if you see me play, you can see that I can play with my face towards the basket instead of my back towards the basket all the time. And I think at St. Joe's, they try to turn me into a player with my back to the basket. And I wasn't kind of used to that. I didn't grow up playing that way. I grew up getting a rebound, pushing it, making a pass or making a play in transition. So that kind of changed everything. But you live and you learn. You have different experiences. I had a great experience at St. Joe's. But then I transferred to Rowan. And then I was still back to the basket because I was the biggest guy on the court. So it didn't matter.
In between there, you have a heart issue, right? And you had to step away from basketball for a little bit?
Yeah, I had a heart arrhythmia. And at first, a lot of people were scared after the hang gathers
issue.
So a lot of people didn't want to mess with me. And, you know, I understand that. It was very scary, obviously, what happened to hang gathers. And nobody wanted another one. Nobody. Believe me, because when I went to the doctors, they were, you know, doctors were saying I had an enlarged heart and I was never going to play again. So I got these diagnoses, but it wasn't really like or anything concrete. It was just, oh, your muscle's beating, your heart is a muscle, it's beating too fast. Then you have a heart arrhythmia. Then they said my heart was too big. Then I had a heart monitor carrying that around. So I had to just wait it out until I had the catheterization. And I had some tests done after I transferred to Rowan. And Coach G, Giannini helped me get it. That was in 94. Yeah, and I had a heart arrhythmia test. And then after my heart arrhythmia test, I got cleared to play because they gave me some really serious tests where I can, like, they had to pump my heart real fast, see if I can take the game and everything like that. So I went through a series of tests and I got cleared. So that opened me up to get back on the court. And then I ended up starting for Rowan as a starting center when we won a national championship.
How tough, scary was that at that point in your life? Because, I mean, most 21, 22-year-olds think you're bulletproof and you know, but yeah. you're an elite athlete on top of that. So how hard was that?
It was extremely hard. I felt like I lost basketball. And at that point, I wasn't even thinking about coaching. I was just devastated because I lost a chance to play the game I love for a year or so. And then I had to sit out and all these tests. And on top of that, wondering about my health and my heart and having this monitor and monitoring my heart and thinking, what if my heart goes out? What if it stops beating or, you know, things like that. So it was kind of devastating, you know, what happened. But I had to make sure that I was trying to stay positive and had a lot of good people around me and pushing me to do the right thing and getting my health back. And Giannini helped me get back on the court, meeting the right doctors and talking to the right people. So that helped me out a whole lot. But it was not fun at all, I'll tell you.
Was it scary getting back on the court?
It was at first. I played a lot of pickup, and when you play a lot of pickup, you tend to forget. At the beginning, you're nervous. You know, you don't want anything to happen. Your heart starts beating fast. You get tired. You want to take a break, and you just want to get through the night of sleep, and then wake up in the morning, and then, you know. When you're in college, you play every day, so you just kind of forget it. You forget your worries, and you just start playing again. And then about when the season came, I was confident enough to be ready for the season, and I didn't miss a game. I didn't miss anything during the year. So it was pretty so when the season started in October, I was pretty confident that I can play, pretty confident in my body. You know, I had the doctors were aware of what happened. So, you know, I had my my proper people in his place in terms of my health, if anything happened to me.
And that year at Rowan, you guys win the national title. I think you had the national semis. You had a tip in that was the game winner. And
yeah,
what's that journey like? You know, after all you've been through to that point, you transfer, the health issues, and now you're helping a team win a national championship.
Oh, it was fun. That year, we were expected to win the national championship. So on top of me going what I did, went through personally, you know, if you look at the makeup of our team and the guys we had come in and transfer that year, we had 4 or 5 transfers that year. We had 5 transfers, and we were all very good. So we had a lot of pressure on us to win a national championship. But for us, it was a lot of fun because we were all so competitive, and the guys who were there were also competitive. We had Terrence Stewart. He was an All-American who was already on the team. He led the way completely. and we meshed together well. So for me personally, I didn't really focus on myself a lot. I just focused on trying to fit in. And I knew I was not in the greatest shape because I was out a year and a half. So I knew I wasn't going to be in tip-top shape. Actually, I got better. I got more in shape after I left and was a professional basketball player than I was in college. But that year we won the national championship, it was a lot of fun. It was pressure, and we competed every day in practice. But at the end, we were extremely talented, and I think we're still the leading scorer in NCAA 3 history in terms of average points in the tournament, in the NCAA tournament. So I think we scored about 100 points a game. So we're a very, very talented team, and it was fun to play. Had an absolutely great year, and that kind of helped me get past my health issues. Met new teammates, got a lot of new friends on the team, won a lot of games. So it kind of got my mind off my own health in terms of what I was going through. So I just played a role on the team. And then in that Final Four game, we just knew we wanted to win. When we got there, we were just going to win no matter what. And I got myself in a position on the court to tip in the last second shot, which to propel us to the national championship game. And I got fouled on that play, too. I tipped it twice on my right and once on my left, and I got fouled. And if you look at the replay, I got hit when I got fouled on my second tip. But the referee didn't call it. But we still won, though.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Rowan University women's basketball coach Demetrius Poles right after this.
Hey, everybody, it's Cherry Gregg here. You may know me around town as KYW News Radio's community affairs reporter, but every week I produce and host Flashpoint, a podcast where we highlight the hot topics in Philadelphia, local newsmakers and change makers burning things up in our region. From gerrymandering to gender equality and policing in schools, we'll walk you through the flames on Flashpoint. It's available wherever you downloaded this podcast that you're listening to now. So subscribe. Thanks so much.
And we are back on One-on-One, continuing our conversation with Rowan women's basketball coach Demetrius Poles. Winning a high school title, winning a college title, how did they compare?
I get asked that a lot. They're two different things because they're two different journeys. I think it's very special because my high school was grassroots. And, I mean, that's the first championship you talk about when you start to get to high school and, you know, winning a state championship in any sport. That's what you play for. I mean, you have these rivalries with these different high schools and everything, and I wanted to kick Glassboro's butt and everything like that because that's where I came from, and they wanted to kick my butt. I think that it's just an innate thing that you just want to – you want everybody wants to win their last game as a senior. And I did in both. I'm very lucky. Not a lot of people can say that. I won my last game as a senior as a high school player. I won my last game as a senior as a college player. So for the high school championship, like I said, is something that you grow up with your teammates, you grow up with your friends that you're growing up with as a kid, and you take that long journey and you're number one in the state. That's a great accomplishment because you grow up and you spend a little bit more time than you do with the kids that you're in college with. In college, it was more like it was a little bit more serious, less time, more competitive, but it all culminated into almost the same thing, but it was like a more accelerated ride because the kids I know from my high school days were I knew them from seventh grade on. From college, I just knew for, you know, just a few years. So it was a lot of fun, but it was kind of fast and it was a little bit more serious than it was in high school. But it was a lot of fun, a whole lot of fun. And like I said, there's not a lot of people who can say they won their last high school games and college games.
No, that's true. That's a pretty short list, I think.
Yes.
How important was Dr. John Giannini? He's your coach, and he's the guy that brings you in after the health scare. So what was the impact he had on you?
Oh, I can't say enough words for Giannini. He's still here for me to this day. I mean, he's going through it now with me with my health issues, even to this day. He's been a rock. He's been somebody who's always been honest with me. He's like a stepfather, a mentor. He's just been there for me. And he's always kept his word. He's never, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of coaches, you know, they may talk a good game, but they don't, it's not a lot of substance behind it. But there's only a few people, he and Phil Martelli, who can really, they'll tell you something, they'll mean it. And they really care for you. Those two guys have been there for me ever since I can remember, since I was a teenager. So they're like father figures to me, and they are family members. And when I went through this bout of cancer and everything, Giannini was stepped up. He was there for my family, there for my fiance, there for my kids, my two boys. You know, even when I was in the hospital, he called my family every day, made sure my kids were okay. And I can't say enough about that. So he's a family member to me and will always be.
How much has what you went through with the heart in college, I don't know if I want to say helped you, but how much did that experience kind of help ground you over the last several months that you've dealt with a serious health issue before and you know how to navigate a little bit the fear, the uncertainty that maybe somebody that's never dealt with these types of issues when they're coming into them cold?
Well, that's a good question. Well, it did prepare me for, you know, doing things I really not wanted to do in the hospital, like MRIs and things like that. But it also prepared me for being ready for the unknown and being ready for catching things off guard. Like, I wasn't prepared to, you know, I thought my cancer was arthritis. You know, I thought I had just arthritis in my back real bad. And then I go to the hospital and they say I got cancer. So that kind of threw me off. But like you said, me having a heart issue earlier in my life has helped me be prepared for moments like that. Because now I can say that nobody can take everything, but at least I can take something serious like that and say I can do the best I can to make the best out of it. Even though I had issues before my heart and I'm feeling woe is me for a little bit and now I have cancer, but now I have to show myself again that I can get through this because I've dealt with things before, you know, serious issues before. Plus I have kids now and I have a team that I care for like they are my kids, and I have to get through this for them. I have to be strong for them as well. And I have to show them that I'm an example of what I speak about when we're in the locker room or when I'm home talking to my kids about serious issues, you know, that I have or I can share with them my experiences, that I can give them some power, I can give them some confidence, some self-confidence about what they can do through their issues that they may have in their lives. So I think I use myself as an example to help other people. And I think that's with this second bout of my health issues that just arised in the last 5 or 6 months, I think I've found my purpose. I'm not here just for myself. I'm here to serve the community. I'm here to serve the university. And I'm here to be a father and make sure that I pass on the strength of my lessons that I've had in my life so I can pass them on to other people.
Basketball after college, you go overseas. And by my count, by my research, you played in 16 different countries.
Yes.
What? How crazy? How much fun? I mean, I would imagine, just from anecdotally what I've heard from other people that have gone overseas, it can run the gamut to being an incredibly well-run, almost NBA-level type professionalism to, I better get to the bank by 3 o'clock because the check's not gonna cash by dinner time. Did you experience everything along that spectrum?
Oh yeah, yeah. The check cashing is fun because that's funny. I started in Beirut. I wanted to play overseas so bad that Phil Martelli gave me a call and asked me that I want to play in Lebanon, and I didn't hesitate. I said yes right away. And he said, well, you know the history of Lebanon. I said, well, yeah, I know a little bit. So then I went and did some research, and then I called him back, and I said, I got a little history, and I'm still going. but yes, for instance, when I went to Lebanon, it was still kind of a little bit of war going on. Weren't really supposed to be there. We got in and went to the U.S. Embassy, and they asked us, why are we here? You weren't supposed to be here. So they still stamped us and let us play. I played in buildings with bomb holes in them. And when you go in, security had to check you for bombs and shoe bombs and everything like that. I mean, this is back in the 90s. And when you got your check, I remember I was trying to leave Lebanon, and they gave me more money because in Israel flew over and they dropped the bomb on southern Beirut, on Hezbollah. And it was not far from Beirut. You can hear the bomb. And me and my American friend, we wanted to leave because our apartment was shaking in Beirut. Everything was shaking. And we lived in a beautiful apartment on the Mediterranean Sea. And I remember calling my general manager. I told him, it's time to go. I said, as soon as these bombs are done, we're going home. Get us a ticket today, and we're going right back home. And he's like, no, 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 it's easy, easy. And he kept on saying easy. I'm like, we're listening to bombs here while we're talking on the phone. None of this is easy. What are you talking about easy for? So he said, okay. And he hangs up the phone. And he comes over with a suitcase with some money, and he gave us money to stay in Lebanon just to play for the rest of the season because he didn't want us to leave. So it went from there to then I go to Sweden and I'm living in a modern country. The checks come in my bank account with no issues. I don't have to call anybody. I don't have to chase my money down. It comes right on time with the rest of the country. The trains and automobiles came on time when you wanted to go somewhere. It was so it is night and day. But you learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about the world. You accumulate so many relationships. I have relationships I have a lot of Lebanese friends now. I have a lot of friends from the Middle East, because I played in the Middle East several times. I have a lot of friends from Europe. So it's an enriching, and I think everybody, especially Americans, I think Americans should travel overseas. I think they should live a little bit in a different world to see how it is, because everything is not like America. Everything, I think we all have to open our minds up, and I wish that we can all share. I wish people over there could see how we live, and they can open their minds up, and the world would be a better place. But I think that it gives you so much education about different places in the world, and it's better than watching the news, because the news is not right all the time.
Did you have, of all the stops, was there a favorite city, a favorite country you played in, that if you had one chance to do it again in one place, what place would it be?
Ooh, hoo-wee. That could be, I would say, I would say Argentina. That was my last place. And my knees were hurting so bad, and I knew it was my last year, and I just physically, my knees couldn't take it. But it was a nice contract, so I had to take the money. But I wish I would have played better. It was just an old man thing. You know when your time is done, and when you can't take it anymore, and then traveling, you know, you're missing your family. But I did love Argentina. It was a great league, and I just wish I would have helped my team more in Argentina.
So you said you knew physically that it, you know, the clock had hit midnight as a player. Was coaching immediately something you thought, or was it a gradual that I need to stay in the game and I've got a lot to give? Because, I mean, besides the basketball experience, with all the traveling and everything, you've got life experience to share. How does coaching come on the scene?
Well, what happened was, because at that time, I lived in Sweden for 17 years, and I speak Swedish, and I'm also a Swedish national team coach. So I got a lot accomplished, and I worked with the NBA in Italy for 11 years. So all the NBA players, I got 81 players drafted from Europe, so I know a lot of Europeans who are in the NBA. So one of my American coach who lived in Sweden for almost 40 years now, he told me one day that you're going to be a great coach. And he said, when you're done playing professional basketball, if you move back to Sweden, I want you to coach with me because you teach me everything. And he's older than me. And I played for him in Sweden. And he thought that I was one of the best passers he's ever seen, or one of the smartest players he's ever seen in his life. So before I left to, because I went from Argentina to Sweden. I wasn't going from America. I was living in Sweden for all the time. So before I left Sweden, he called me and said, because he kind of knew that this is my last year coming up. And he said, well, if you want to coach, come back and I'll hire you right away. So I got into coaching. His name is Dan Sarapova. Actually, his second oldest son plays for Davidson now. His oldest son played for Davidson College. Is one of the best three-point shooters at Davidson. His name is Chris Sarapova. He plays in the EuroLeague now. So he wanted me to come back and help him coach his oldest son when his oldest son was younger. So that's how I got started. And then after that, I got hired as a professional coach in Sweden, and I started coaching professionally in Sweden. I coached three professional teams in Sweden. I won one championship.
A conference championship. Didn't win a league sweat. I lost a league championship twice, but I won one conference championship. It was their first Southern Division title in their club's history, and their club's They have a different way of looking at things over there in terms of sports. Like their hometown, they take it seriously. It's almost like a Syracuse thing. Their professional sports is Syracuse. Mm-hmm. I got a chance to do very well in Sweden, and then I got a chance to go to Italy with the NBA, which is great, which kind of expanded my knowledge because I got to work with the best coaches in the world for a living.
Well, Demetrius Poles, this has been so much fun. I wish you all the best health-wise. Thank you for taking the time, and I just wish you a speedy recovery. Thank you so much.
Anytime, man. Anytime. I like talking to you.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One. I want to sincerely thank Demetrius Poles, head women's basketball coach at Rowan University, for being our guest this week. If you like this show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, want to help us out, please leave us a rating and a review. Now, you can follow the show on Twitter at One-on-One-Pod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle,
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All the Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.